Did you know the average age of a digital nomad falls right at 40 years old? Oh, and another fun fact here. The ages 29, 33, and 39 are the most common ages of any digital nomads in the world. It goes to show, though, you can be nomadic whatever the age. Today, we're joined by two special guests who've been nomads longer than most of you guys listening to this. We're joined by Alan Koski and Andrew Jernigan, founders of Insured Nomads and the host of the New Nomad podcast. Join us while we dive into their nomadic journeys and advice over their years as digital nomads. Remember, Nomad fam, we've got some incredibly value-filled episodes planned out for you, so please hit that subscribe button and leave a review. Your review helps this podcast become more visible and ultimately inspire more people just like you. My name's Omar Moe, and this is The Nomadic Executive.
You're listening to The Nomadic Executive, hosted by Omar from Nomadables.com. Join Omar as he sits down and speaks with leading online entrepreneurs, remote workers, and digital nomads about everything from business strategy to travel and lifestyle design. Together, we're here to help you achieve a life of happiness, health, and freedom. And now here's your host, Omar Moe.
All right, Andrew and Alan from the New Nomad podcast. Welcome to the Nomadic Executive. How are you guys this morning?
Doing wonderful. Fantastic.
So, very well. It's a pleasure to be with you, Omar.
Absolute pleasure having you both on. And Andrew here for round two. So something that I want to start off with right away here is this special word that Alan and Andrew have spoken about just a few minutes prior to me actually pressing the record button here. And that word is kismet. So before I dive into here for my audience what the word kismet is, or have Andrew and Alan explain to you what it is, I want you guys to understand that Andrew and Alan own a business called Insured Nomads and are both co-hosts of a podcast called The New Nomad. They've been friends for many years and have launched businesses together, traveled together, done all sorts of different things. And kismet is what they use to describe their relationship. So Alan, take it away.
What is that? Yeah, I think if you went to the dictionary, it would be it's destiny or fate. And sometimes you just meet somebody that you're like, you know what? I think destiny has us working together on a project. Very different people, but you kind of feel that both of you fulfill a certain role that the other one does not. And I think that when I met Andrew and we talked about building Insured Nomads, there was some kismet there. It was almost fate that we would end up working together. What do you think, Andrew? Are you in the same?
Definitely. You know, it was originally for me, you know, it was a thing of, okay, I just admired where you've been, the expertise that you carry. You're an industry thought leader. And, you know, our first phone call, it was that thing of, okay, there's more to this. And now it's those mountain bike rides and other things as we explore the world together. And I hear the stories, we share the stories and go deeper.
And one other thing, Omar, about kismet, kismet is almost always a positive development. Mm-hmm. So you don't often hear of like negative kismet. So when I use that, it's a very nice term. And I, you know, in this day and age where we want to be as positive as possible, when you have that moment of kismet, you just feel it. And sometimes you just have to go with your follow that dream. So
it's a very gut feeling, it seems. It seems like you just kind of know when it happens. And that's something that I'm sure many people that are listening to this podcast itself can relate to some degree, having that feeling of kismet, whether it was with a loved one or a friend or a parent or someone in the past or someone that you just met that you just kind of automatically clicked with, right? Or knew something was going
to
happen.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know what's interesting up to that, Omar, is so my mom used to say, you ever run into somebody right away and you instantly like them, you know, and you say, this is just not rational, but I immediately like this person. I feel like there's a deeper relationship to be had there. You know, I use the word kismet. She used to say that she actually felt this was her own dream, was that, you know, souls kind of travel in packs and that you might be somebody from a previous existence or life that you traveled with. And that it's a comforting feeling to me, whether that's true or not, that there's opportunities for people to get together again and again and again, right? And share a great experience.
That definitely is comforting to a certain degree when you think about it. I've thought about something like that, similar to that reincarnation type thing before, and definitely is always nice to know. And it's romanticized a little bit, I think, in movies and stuff, but you're going to run into the same kind of people that were in past lives, you know. But it also
my first encounter with that, Omar, I must interject. My first encounter, it was a flashback right now. My cousin, I was helping them move. Hurricane had just hit Florida and all this furniture was soaked. And I think I was about 9 years old from the flooding. Were crawling at my ankle and biting me, and I was slapping them, and it was like, don't do that, that could be your great grandfather.
Oh, geez. On the flip side, like, you ever meet those kind of people that you just see and you just want to punch them in their face? Like, you've never met them before and you just have that feeling of just like, I don't like this person. I wonder what that relates to as well on the flip side of it. I don't want to dwell there too long, but it just brought my curiosity up when you mentioned one end of it, what the opposite end of it would be.
Well, it's funny, Omar, you bring that up, because that I've had the exact same feeling. And even worse is you meet somebody immediately and you dislike them, and then you get to know them and then you like them, and then you realize,
right?
Yeah, sometimes first impressions. Now, I'll be honest with you, I always feel that first impressions are extremely important and most of the time correct. But there are those times, you probably have had the same thing, Omar and Andrew, right? That your initial impression, then you realize later on, yeah, that was...
Judging a book by its cover can sometimes be, well, I would say about 20 to 25% of the time wrong, right? Because there's something that I realized as I get older, I guess, and I'm sure you guys understand this too. It's just, I mean, we're all, and especially as digital nomads, like, we're all just human, right? Like, everyone has their own faults and weird and eccentricities and quirks and all sorts of things, and some of them might not resonate with you in the first 5 to 10 seconds of meeting them, but that doesn't make them different than you. They're just different upbringing, different environment, different outsides. That's all it really is.
Well, you know, it's funny, in a business environment, I used to always, in my organizations, wanted to have somebody who I called a skeptic. Mm-hmm. Now, somebody who would challenge, you know, before we went down that primrose path to a big decision, would be the person that might even irritate us the most by saying, hold it a second here. Are we on groupthink? What if this goes south? And I know a lot of people would get really uptight and dislike the skeptic and feel like, oh my God, this person's slowing us down. And then I realized as I got a little bit older, I got to let that go, because what that person is actually doing is giving a great gift to us, that they feel confident enough to slow us down and play the you know, other side of the coin. And it actually saved us from lots of mistakes. And so many of the people I've worked with are like, you know, at first I didn't like that person because they were always skeptical. And then you realize later on, they saved us from some colossal errors. And you begin to realize we really like that, and we need that type of diversity in a group.
Everyone has that role to play. What would you, Andrew, what would you say? And I'm assuming, like, you both have this dynamic as well, right? Like, you both have your own roles, and going back to even Kismet here, you both have different things that play into each other personality wise. In building insured nomads, what piece of the puzzle are you both in that company? Like, what roles do you play, and what do you, if you could, you know, someone's like the fixer, someone's like the leader, someone's like the consultant, like, everyone has a different kind of role they play in the company. What would you guys kind of narrow yourselves down?
Well, we started in 2019, pre-pandemic, you know, a remote company. I was actually spending most of my time that year in and out of Delaware, where Alan is, and in Rio de Janeiro. I think that's where we originally met, Omar, is when I was living in Rio.
Right.
And I, as one of the founders, we have a team of founders and senior leadership. I generally am one heavily involved in sourcing the leadership, the working with investor relations, because we have institutional investors, working with the reinsurance companies, a lot of the big vision aspects.
I see.
And that is an intricate part of my world. And hopefully right after this call, I'll be talking with Alan about a new senior leadership person, team member that could be joining our team. And so a lot of these are collaborative. We sat face to face yesterday with one of our board members. And yeah, Alan, I'll pass it over to you. And as you share into.
So Omar, when Andrew gives elliptical answers, my role is to actually just speak it a little bit more straight. Andrew raises the money, and I go out and I work with brokers, consultants, business partners, and try to raise the premium. And in an insurance organization where you're supporting people, both of us work together on getting feedback from all parties on what would make the product better. So we overlap there. But Andrew is really more on the institutional side. I'm more, as we kind of say it, as you build something, there's a front office that is out in the market. I'm more of the front office. Andrew is middle and back office in the sense that he's got the folks that are actually running the company as far as, you know, taking the calls, claims, et cetera. And then he's setting the course on there. So it's a good partnership on that. So makes to sense. Specifically answer your question, we front office, back office, and we overlap in the middle office.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. I get that. That's a unique dynamic as well, because I think everyone needs, and this is just from being a founder of my own company, I think everyone needs that kind of back end, front end relationship. Right? Someone who's people facing, someone who's logistics facing, someone who, or even technical co-founder, executive co-founder, right? Like different things like that, that partnership, that dynamic, I think is what makes a company flourish. But if we were to bring back to when you guys actually first, right? How was that? Like, where did you guys meet? How did you guys get in touch with each other? Where did this whole budding idea of Insured Nomad start in the first place?
Well, I'll take this and then hand over to Andrew. Andrew is a great networker, maybe the best networker I've ever run into. And he reached out to me and we just had a conversation about a vision for a company that would serve people better. And I'd come out of a more of a corporate background where we group plans. And as we spoke, we started to realize, you know, when somebody leaves a company and becomes a remote worker, they lose a lot of what they used to have in the corporate environment. They lose their health plan. They lose the evacuation coverage. They lose a lot of the perks like lounge access. And also I mentioned to Andrew, you know, for instance, my daughter lives in California, and she, for a period of time, she was living by herself. I wanted to make sure she had a panic button, some security when she was out on the phone. And we just riffed back and forth on what's missing to help the remote or location independent person once they're out on their own. And we said, let's build a product. So there, let me hand the baton to Andrew, because he really took it from there and said, yeah, let's do this. And frankly, he's the energy to build out a new company.
Sure.
And I think, you know, it's a really good partnership that way, because we both compare notes, but it was a shared vision, I think, from the get-go.
Was this both of yours first companies, or have you guys built something? I know you came from a corporate environment, Alan, but Andrew, had you built something before this?
Yes, I had built a multinational brokerage and services, crisis response, EAP consulting firm.
So similar
field. And other companies throughout time, you know, 20 some odd, over 20 years ago, I started out with being a digital nomad with my laptop working in Brazil and Europe.
Sure.
So that was back in the 90s and early 2000, I mean, in 2000. And so that was my first venture. But I had been watching Alan throughout the years. We've been connected on LinkedIn and seeing him as he had led at Cigna Global, United Healthcare Global Solutions, and different places, and, you know, speaking at conferences. And it was right around the time of one of those that we took this deeper and said, okay, look, we're moving ahead with building something better. And it was that thing of, okay, this has got to happen. The world needs, the global workforce is shifting, but yet our industry wasn't really shifting as quickly as it could have. There were some co-brands, there were some new things happening, but really innovation and change that is vitally important to keep the consumer at where they feel like it needs to be.
Sure.
To deliver and just reinvent what the world really feels that they need, but yet the industry wasn't delivering. And with that, you know, we're looking at the future, the things that we're rolling out. It is exhilarating, really, this process, as Alan and our team just pours into new developments. This is, so, you know, it's fun.
Just to interject, this is the other, we left out the personal aspects of it. As you may see, and people listening to this podcast, you can hear that Andrew's extremely, my job is to needle him constantly. One thing is he's got a very good sense of humor, And sometimes I think a big part of a good relationship is if you could laugh together. And I love to needle people in a nice way. And Andrew's actually a really easy target for me because he wears his heart on his sleeve. And frankly, I'm a little bit more hard bitten than he is. So it's an enjoyable thing. So I also realized that here's somebody I could enjoy and have some fun with. And you can see he's got a great smile, which I can make fun of also at certain times. So don't leave out the personal aspects of that. There's differences there.
Right. I get it. I think you help Andrew keep a bit more grounded. And this is my outside things, right? While Andrew, but you also help keep him a little bit more guarded too, right? Because in the corporate world and in a cutthroat environment, as business can be sometimes, even if we lead from empathy, like I like to do and you guys like to do, there can be moments where things can run slipshod over situations where you don't want it to happen, right? And I think like I relate to Andrew a lot more in this, right? Because I wear my heart on my sleeve a lot. And if it wasn't sometimes for some of my business partners saying, hey, you're putting too much empathy into this, like this is still a business transaction or something like that, then and help me reel it back, it wouldn't be possible, right? I'd probably have gone out of business.
It's a great point. And we assume positive intent. I think he assumes it a little bit more than I do. And that's
right. Alan knows that I would insure the world for free if I could. Right. And I'd give the world access to everything.
Right.
Because that's my nature. I cringe when I hear that something bad is assumed. Mm. And it's just not part of who I am, but it's nice. I grew up in the South in the US until my 20s when I hit the world for the past 25 years.
Right.
And Alan, you know, from Connecticut, it's Alabama to the Northeast. Alan has hit more countries than I ever will probably in his global travels. But
I was kind of a different type of nomad. So I did study overseas in the UK and travel about. But during the course of my business career, I've been to 70 countries and 2 trips around the world, et cetera. And also
part of being in a corporate environment.
All in part of being in a corporate environment. And when I took my vacations, I would take them globally to places that no one else wanted to really go. So I usually would find a friend who, you know, would, hey, let's go to, I mean, how many people go to Jordan? Well, I love Jordan, and there's the Dead Sea and there's Petra. So places that most Americans would not want to go, or we went, you know, Ukraine was tremendous and I highly recommend it. But, you know, a lot of Americans want to just go to Paris and London. I would try to go to Thailand or Cambodia or unique places. But on business, I would go to a lot of these locations. And yeah, and maybe the thing that I took away from that too is even while you serve, you assume positive intent, there are different ways of saying no, yes, or maybe. And you know, there's things that you really need to protect yourself from in an environment. And we see a lot of the remote workers. I mean, for instance, to me, somebody goes overseas and doesn't have evacuation coverage, you know, if they have to be moved to an appropriate medical facility where they are, okay, is missing a huge protection. And I almost feel like one of the things that Andrew and I did share in this pursuit is a missionary zeal to protect people. But a lot of folks, when they go somewhere, they don't protect themselves. And then you read these stories of later on that, oh, I wish I had had a travel medical policy because I didn't have the $13,000 to get out of the hospital. Oh, I didn't want to have to buy a policy for $50 that would have protected me my 1 week vacation. And now they're crowdfunding $14,000 to pay for an ambulance, you know, an air ambulance. And you kind of said the right, Andrew, we've been down that road, the years of traveling and meeting people and hearing these stories.
I can remember my own stupidity here, to be honest. I remember the first year I went on this 3-year trip back in 2016. And the first year I just refused to get, I saved like $10,000 at that time, right? I had my first big boy job after college. It was for a few months and I decided to go out to go travel. And I went to Australia and I said, you know what? I don't need health insurance or any sort of insurance when I'm going out there. Everything that you thought could have happened, happened. Within the first 3 weeks, I almost drowned. I had to get CPR to get rescued. I broke both of my fingers here. I was at a club and I fell down without realizing it. I just kind of broke my fingers. I don't remember exactly what happened, but a lot of them were drunk accidents, to be honest.
Yes.
I broke my foot. So that was another thing. I was in crutches for about 6 weeks, and that was just, or no, not 6 weeks. It was more like 3 weeks, but it took about 6 weeks to fully heal. And I couldn't make it to the doctor because I didn't have health insurance. So I had to borrow my friend's crutches from the hostel room. I broke my nose, which now I just got surgery earlier this year, my bad. And they finally straightened it out. But
you look marvelous, by the way. Just want to let you know.
But it was legitimately curved like to the side because of something that happened in Australia. So a lot of stuff went down, and I could have made my life so much easier if I had actually got insurance, because then I could have gone to the doctors and figured out what to do or what not to walk on it or all these other things that just delayed my healing process, you know?
And you would have gotten direct payment, or we would have said, hey, this is not a good facility to go to. I mean, the stories that I had, and this is, you know, when you're in a long career in insurance, you hear this. I mean, there was a gentleman who went to India, got an eye infection, but didn't have a travel medical program, said, I'm just going to wait till I get home to my home country insurance. And then, you know, by the time this happened, was stayed for another week. The infection was so bad, there was major long-term ramifications to the vision in that eye. You know, and these are the type of things, as we said in the industry, you know, cheap is expensive. You know, if you don't spend the money to protect yourself on the front end, it's a big miss. And the surprise for Andrew and myself is, frankly, these policies are almost ridiculously inexpensive. I mean, it's, you know, to get $100,000 of medical and evacuation and a lot of services, it could be like $100 a week, depending on your age. And you say to yourself, what a great protection. At the same time, you know, you spend money on a lot of other things. But listen, we all feel bulletproof, don't we? Until we are. And I'm happy you shared this.
We
do feel the first time I told that sometimes. Story.
We all do. We all feel like Superman on our best days until you're in bed sick or something, right? I remember that I was just in Mexico like last month, and I got really, really bad food poisoning, like really bad. I'm sure it would have helped if I got to the doctor or something, but I had to come back to stateside before I even saw one.
Yeah, speaking of superpowers, you know, I think about names, you know, that we carry so much strength with our name, because our name is our honor, etc. And I'm on a call this afternoon with someone named Thor. And I'm thinking, I want to do business with this guy just because he has, his name is Thor, you know, it's fun. You know, awesome. The superpower, the feeling bulletproof, does take a proactive stance, though.
Sure.
I remember when one time years back, my wife is, you know, and is one of our co-founders. She's a travel med doc. And her goal, since she graduated med school, she wanted to go off and practice medicine in Africa. And we ended up, you know, a few years later, finding a place that we set our sights on and moved there. And it was a wild season. Pre-departure, though, even trying to find life insurance to cover us there. Because we realized, you know, I was, I don't know, 29, 30 years old.
Right.
And realized I'm not invincible. Wanted to have more life insurance than my group plan would provide to me, since it was really minimal what came with a group plan. And that was so, providing things like that is of highest importance, because we aren't invincible, even though this morning I feel like,
you know, I'm curious when it comes to Nomad insurance, right? Like, I know how health insurance works. What I never got was the undercurrent or what's behind the doors of what Nomad insurance is. How are you able to insure an individual in multiple countries? How does that process work? Do you have relationships built with hospitals all around the world, or is there something more? Is there something less complicated than that? Like, how does that work?
Well, first off, there is a little bit of artistry to global insurance, because to your point, you multiply it by the languages and the currencies and the health systems.
Right.
And think about it this way: most hospital systems, there's two pieces. There's the hardware, which is the machinery. And there's the software. How good are the doctors, the nurses, the surgeons? And even in some locations, and Andrew can speak to this because he ran a hospital, a clinic in Ghana, is that sometimes you have great doctors, but not great machinery. Sometimes you have to make do. So one of the things about what we provide is, you know, not only are we going to direct you and help you get to the level of care and comfort you, but we're also going to make sure that the claim is paid efficiently. And to your point, you know, you go, you know, somebody's going to put off care because they're not sure they can pay the claim. That deferred, you know, it could make the infection get worse. you could find that there's a lot more ramifications. And I'll turn it over to Andrew for a second, in one second. But one of the things I'll mention about when I've traveled and the countries I go to, I go visit the hospitals and the clinics. And in, even in one location, in one city, you could have a clinic that is exceptional to one that culturally you would never want to go to. So you even got to match the culture. And I think to the remote workers that we have out there, those location independent people, they're very active. They're going to go to a lot of places. So they're not just going to stay in Costa Rica and work and surf. They may go up to Mexico. And so we're going to have to help them wherever they are. But it's about proactively keeping people out of harm's way. What do you think, Andrew?
You're spot on, but providing this type of protection for cross-border individuals goes beyond so much further than if someone is admitted or, you know, if they have a broken arm or get a chronic illness diagnosis. It's preventative. It's providing virtual health, telemedicine, as we do, whether it's going to come in Hebrew or Hindi or Portuguese or French, English or Italian. That, I think, is one of the foundational things that we do and is essential in providing good care around the world is the preventative, not just for telemedicine, but for the emotional health, to provide the multilingual, cross-culturally relevant well-being and mental health therapy sessions, whether by phone, video, chat, things like that, the protection that this type, that our type of person, like us, like you, Alan, myself, crave more than just the whether or not you get sick or injured.
This is such a big scope of work. There's so much that goes into something like this, like much more. And you've worked at national health coverage companies, Alan. Like, what does it take to pull something this big off?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it seems daunting, but here's the great thing. This is another thing about partnership. And I recommended this to people that if you're going to start a new business, start it in a business that you know something about. So both Andrew and I have known about global healthcare. We've been in it. We've experienced it. So there's also great people out there that are willing to partner with you that also share the same vision. But I'll mention this to tie into kind of the thought. If people are out there and they're saying themselves they want to go overseas and they want to get good healthcare, more and more companies are saying to people, become a remote worker or we'll hire you as a consultant. But more and more countries are saying, we want to make sure before you come here, you have healthcare. You might have evacuation. Because we don't necessarily want you to come here and use our national health system and cost us money.
Right.
But there's a lot of these, there's a digital nomad visas that are coming out. We actually are going to see a trend in the next few years that people, when they go work somewhere, are going to probably have to show while they get their work visa that they have a certain level of healthcare coverage. Because people don't want the uninsured in their country. And then they also want, if they get really sick, the opportunity for them to get back home. We're already seeing this trend in the Middle East and other places. So a big part of also about being in this space is we can kind of see where the trends are going. I mean, Andrew touched upon it. One of the big issues in the past that people didn't spend a lot of time on was mental health. We've had to build in a lot of mental health support for this nomadic population because of stress. Right. And sleep, and you know, and there's a lot of changes that are going on in the environment, or protecting your family when you bring them with them. A lot of them are split families. You know, mom and dad might go and that nomadic experience of being in Costa Rica, yet your children are at college, or they're hitchhiking through Europe. So we have a lot of split families. Very so it's really difficult to put a finger on it. But what do you think, Andrew, to Omar's question? It could be daunting, but I think if what we try to do is methodically move forward and add a piece at a time, you build and you as he used to say, you survive in advance.
Right.
You just keep moving.
Yes. As a people company, but also as a technology company, as a care provider, but yet being willing to build the APIs, provide it so that enrollment is easy, whether it's, you know, it's that balance of being caring, but yet advancing with the age. They're great folks out there, and working from that premise of realizing that and seeing the good and building the good that needs to happen.
Well, I'll even mention this, Omar. You know, Andrew and I had a dream of helping people in this space. And we said, what would be a great mechanism is a podcast. And we found a person named Omar Moe who helped us not ride off in the sunset with a second rate podcast, but a first rate podcast. And we slew you. You're a perfect example of somebody in that ecosystem that we all try to help people and bring messages and support.
Right.
And I think the last thing that I think people should do is really talk to others and learn from our mistakes. And everything that Andrew and I bring today in Insured Nomads and in this conversation, we probably have messed up once before. And now we learned our lesson, or we've dealt with somebody who messed up. And now we want to prevent others from making the same mistakes. And seriously, we also want to make it easy. This is probably the other thing that we hear from people. It's complex to move around. You got to do your taxes and you got to do the paperwork. Well, let's make the healthcare program as easy as possible for the people to use and as understandable as possible. Yeah, it's so easy is so important.
I like that a lot. I mean, in a complex life, like the way a digital nomad lives, something that's easy is a breath of fresh air for sure. Speaking about your podcast though, right? The New Nomad. Now, you said you started this company pre-coronavirus. So, and obviously coronavirus has, I would assume, helped speed up the direction where things were going anyways, in the sense of probably more people are going to start getting nomad insurance overall around the world. So what is the New Nomad to you guys? Right. So it's this new age of nomads. What does it mean to you, Alan? And what does it mean to you, Andrew?
Me, what the biggest change, and COVID accelerated this, is that companies could understand that people who work it are location independent. You know, for instance, I worked at home for 5 years, my last 5 years in a corporate environment. I worked in Delaware and our corporate headquarters was in Minnesota. And I know there was a bit of resistance to that, which meant that I had to travel out a lot for internal meetings, et cetera. And I even think about this, our WebExes until COVID were, you wouldn't even see people. And then all of a sudden Zoom calls and Teams, and now we all see each other. And I have friends who used to have to commute in from Delaware to Philadelphia. And they'd be like, you know what? I'm going into Philadelphia. It costs me 45 minutes every day in and out when the traffic is good. Mm-hmm. I have to pay for parking. I'm in a higher tax and it cuts into my day and we walk around and talk a lot. And now they work at home and they're like, well, guess what? I work a lot actually, but I enjoy it a lot more because my dog is here. I can take him for a walk at lunch. I don't have to pay wage tax. I don't have to drive. And companies are seeing this. Well, accelerate this also in a global area. A lot of companies post-COVID said, we'll hire people back as consultants. We don't need to bring them on employees. Now, that means if you're a consultant, though, you have to find your own healthcare and your own security and your own support. This is what we wanted to support. But to me, what the new nomad is the understanding that you don't have to be all sitting in a building of 500 people to get something done. And corporations that also understand that, I think, are going to have a leg up. And by the way, corporations have understood this, too, because you know how expensive renting space in a city like Philadelphia, New York, or San Francisco is.
Right.
That's my definition. I'll turn it over to Andrew, but to me, it's more of a corporate change and it affects the individuals. I know Andrew's going to bring in that a lot of the countries are supporting this initiative now, too, for the first time.
Yeah, and when I think about the new nomad, I think about those who left Lebanon to go start a mattress factory in West Africa, who said, you know, they're leaving everything behind and opening a grocery store, opening a mattress factory, doing what they do best. A lot of times the focus is on the developer that says, oh, I can travel with my laptop. But a lot of times this nomadic person, this formerly referred to as immigrant or expat or world schooling family, that doesn't take on a lot of these labels. They've been around for decades. They've been around for centuries. And now it's in the spotlight of, oh, you can work high. So you'll need extra care. You'll need extra provisions for duty of care, for the ability to check in with GOIP tracking for security's sake. You know, response, because they're able to say, okay, yes, they are. We know where they are when that cyclone hit, things like that. So the aspect of this, the the new nomad doesn't actually mean new to it.
Right.
It's just saying, okay, the awareness of the various flavors, the various places on the spectrum that this type of person hits from the study abroad student who decides to stay there after the master's degree is complete. They're still rather transient. They're new to the area. They're still grasping the new culture and they're open to going to a country next. It's, you know, it comes in so many different wrappings.
Right. It seems all much more the way it's coming, more technical, more digital. It's easier than ever to be able to do something like this. Right. So I'm really excited to see the way the world's headed. I think there's a lot of assumptions being made right now in which direction what's going. And I remember sitting on a podcast with Mitko just 2 weeks ago, and we both had an in-depth conversation. If you guys, by the way, if my audience is listening to this, if you want to go check it out, that would be episode 79, I believe, or 78. But we had an in-depth conversation about directions that we think the world could be headed just in a few years from now with remote work and all this picking up. So, but either way, very, very interesting topics here. Now, what I want to do is I want to sort of finalize question over here, right? It's more about the future of insured nomads. I know you guys just launched your product and it's going to a certain direction. Andrew, you seem like the architect of this entire thing. And you've got this grand vision planned out, I'm sure, a few years ahead. What direction do you both want to take this? And what is the grand vision that you have for insured nomads? What is it going to be?
Good question. Because the world is changing faster than we can predict. Our phones are different than we anticipated they will be, and they will shift even more so. Apps will be changing. We won't be focused on apps in 5 years from now, probably. Things are radically shifting with the way countries view people entering. So regulatory changes will be made on the products that can be developed and sold. And the fintech, insurtech environment will be merging more and more so that we'll be able to develop products that never... Alan is, you know, leads a lot of the distribution and innovation aspects. And so I know with the global workforce, the ASO, I'll pass that off to you, Alan, because I know you deal with a lot of the multinational corporations and what they're looking for. And as they're actually looking at their workforce differently now, that's where I see us going in providing this group from disability, life, health benefits beyond insurance. Go for it.
Yeah. You know, in the next 3 to 5 years, so I'll take it two ways. First off, from a perspective of groups, so corporations that have large groups of nomadic workers, at the same time that they want more control and support, like geopositioning tools to know where people are to get them out of the way of the cyclone, there's also a balance of privacy there. They also want the ability to have more, and this is kind of insurance techie, more funding arrangements. Basically, they'd like to have more flexibility on how they pay for the plans, how the plans reimburse people. Like, for instance, in the past, people used to have to claim and then mail the claim in and then get it sent to the bank. Well, obviously, now we have tools on our phone that you want to have claim paid immediately at the source, and you want it back to what we talked about earlier, easy. So the corporate environment, they're looking for more support on an easy basis for their people. They don't want their benefit staff spending a lot of time in the middle like they have in the past. They just want to be able to hire and evaluate their employees. They want to disintermediate from healthcare. So what Andrew and I need to bring to the market is programs totally empower the individual to the level that they're comfortable with to do what they need to do to stay healthy or get the claims paid, no matter what language or currency. Now, on an individual side of things, they're looking for more control of their own destiny at the same time without giving away all their privacy. So you need people to pick different levels. Like, do I want to be geo-positioned all the time where you know where I am? Or do I want it, you know, unique times? Can I just go to any clinic? Can you direct me to the right clinic? They also want wider level of care. We talked a lot about healthcare here, but people want to make sure their dental issues are taken care of. I mentioned about the eyes. You know, there's a lot of vision issues that come with remote workers. People get eye injuries all the time. You want to make sure you go to a clinic that's clean. effective. You don't get secondary infections. So there's a lot of different levels here. And I'll even give you one even world type thing that I think in the next few years, and it may take a little bit longer. Why do we even have time zones? So why do I, you know, why do, when I have a remote worker call, have to say to somebody, all right, I'm going to call you at 8 a.m. Eastern, and you're going to have to figure out what it is in Australia. As the world gets smaller, why wouldn't we all just be on the time zone and say, I'm going to have the call with you at 8 o'clock? And the 9-to-5 existence, which we think of as an old, well, it could be a different time, but it's still wake up in the morning, you go to work, and you finish at dinner time. It doesn't, I mean, there's things like that that need to come. And I think we're going to see a quantum leap as people start saying, why do we just do this like we used to do this? This is just a waste of effort and energy, and things can be much more efficient.
I like it. It'd be really, really curious to see how, what these quantum leaps are going to be like. Right. I mean, something as simple as not even using apps anymore in 5 years is unfathomable to me right now at this point. Right. But it's crazy how exponentially the world is moving in a different direction, and a pandemic even sped that up more. I mean, we're at a point right now where I didn't think we were going to be for another 10 years at the very least. So I'm really curious to see. It's exciting times. I mean, that's what I can definitely say about it. Exciting times for sure.
In Armor, one other thing, right, when we focus on technology, I just want to mention, there's also going to be a reaction against it in the sense that, and I'm already seeing with the remote workers, is with so much technology, instead of when you're done with work, going and playing more games, we're starting to see more people saying, I'd like to go surfing, or I'd like to go mountain biking, or I'd like to go read, or hiking, or walking. I think in the next few years, you're also going to see, as technology increases, and we don't want technology to stop, it gives us so many gifts. I also think people are starting to say, one of the reasons I went to this place is I wanted to be able to walk to a tree and grab a fruit and enjoy it in a wonderful environment. So I'm not always in
plugged
that
in.
Hurry up rate. So I'll turn it over to you, Andrew. I see you're ready to add to something along those lines, perhaps.
Yeah, and as we never expected for people to have a voice that they do today, where people in the middle of nowhere can talk to people in the urban jungle through things such as Spotify's Greenhouse or Clubhouse or other voice-only technologies that are providing the community and learning spontaneously, where groups can gather and discuss things. That wasn't even fathomed very long ago. And where are we going to see tomorrow? How are we going to see banking and insurance and education and all these sectors shift? We've got to be willing to release a lot of the controls, and I think governments are going to be the ones to drive some of that change, to say, sure, we won't make it so hard for people to get into our countries, and we won't make taxation as heavy, because we want them to come, and global movement, global mobility will be empowered. And so, yes, the shift that we're riding, we're really on the shore looking at the waves. We're not really riding the waves yet.
Yeah.
But I think the water is right, and we're beginning to learn to surf, so that when we can stand on that board, we're going to see some great events.
It's interesting to think that the economics of a country aren't going to so much rely on their locals anymore as much as it will their global citizens. You know, I mean, with the rise of digital nomad visas alone, it's going to be interesting to see where that goes. These are topics.
Yeah, with Ireland, we'll have new countries birthed from this.
Definitely. I mean, they already have that initiative going on in Madeira right now with the digital nomad village, right? That's a very small scale thing of what we're expecting to see. But just even having locations of global citizens like that, I mean, what happens in that case, though, right? It feels like you just become settlers of a different country, and then you just end up staying there. So there might be this global movement of people moving from one country to another, and they're just the whole infrastructure of who's in what country doesn't even matter anymore, because now you have quote unquote Americans and Belgians and this in Norway, and then you have Norwegians and Eastern Europeans and Australians in America. Like, what country is even what anymore? Is a country defined by its locals or its geographical region, right? So it's going to be very curious to see what direction that goes. But what I want to do now is I want to close the podcast off with one final question here. And Andrew, I know you know this question all too well. Alan, I'm sure you've heard this question or me ask this question to some degree or another. So I think you guys know where this is headed. But if you had a billboard in space and on that billboard, you could write anything not related to your business, but rather more about life that everyone on the planet could see every single day, what would you write? We can start with you, Andrew.
Oh, I'm still thinking. Give me a moment.
Sure. Why don't we start with
you? Because I'm not going to use what I wrote last time on my billboard.
Right, right. Cool.
I'll hop in. I would write, you know, be kind to others. And I'll just give you one little aside on being kind, because you just don't know the situation others are in. My wife the other day was at a stoplight in a car in front, really took off from the light very slowly, and people were tooting the horn. And then they got to the next light, the road split. So there was two lanes, and she was at the light next to this car. And the gentleman next to her, both the windows were down. And he said, thank you, because she didn't toot. She goes, thank you for not tooting at me. The reason why it's so hard for me to get off the line is my transmission is in trouble and I can only start in second. And I'm trying to get to the dealer because I'm not towing. And then, of course, the light changes and she takes off. And she says, she's taking off. She's thinking to herself, but there are people behind her that are going to start tooting again. And the poor guy's going to just try to get going. But she felt really happy that she was assuming there was something else because it was an older car that was going on. Benefit and I said to her, I said, I'm proud of you because this is about assuming the person's trying and being kind. And by the way, tuning is not going to make, or hammering the horn is not going to make anything better. And you see all these things that happen now with people not being kind or being in, you know, hopping on each other. It's kind of just disconcerting. And I think if we could just have another level of kindness on there. So on that billboard would be kind to others, or I would put the Insured Nomads web address. So maybe we could have all the people who need individual insurance find us easier, because that would actually help advertising budget quite a bit to have a free billboard like that.
www.insurednomads.com, right
there. Yes. Yes, that would probably save us like $1 billion in advertising costs. So, so I'm going back. What's the good for humanity or what's the good for Insured Nomads? We might have to bounce this one about back a little bit.
Maybe a slideshow in the air or something.
You might have to do something like that. Exactly.
Sure. What's your answer, Andrew?
Be a hope builder. And I leave that because so many people are hopeless, or they need an encounter with someone that will fertilize their level of hope. And you can't do that if you don't have hope, because you can't give something you don't have. So that's a new and previous episode with you. Go back and listen to that. But yeah, that's mine.
Be a hope builder. I like it. Be kind and be a hope builder. Moving the world forward. Thanks so much for coming on today, Andrew and Alan. It was an absolute pleasure.
We appreciate it. And we appreciate you. Thank you.
Remember, Nomad fam, we've got some incredibly value-filled episodes planned out for you, so please hit that subscribe button and leave a review. Your review helps this podcast become more visible and ultimately inspire more people just like you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nomadic Executive. If you enjoyed this episode, take a moment to leave a rating or review. Your feedback helps us reach others who need a spark of inspiration. See you next time.